Yeehaw! And welcome back to the Magic Story Podcast. I'm your host, Harless.
And I'm your other host, Natalie.
In this podcast, Natalie and I recap the fiction story of Magic the Gathering, but we add in our own flair and flavor text along the way. Currently, we are in Season 8, which follows the story behind the set Outlaws of Thunder Junction.
The rootinest tootinest set this side of the multiverse. Today's episode is covering Episode 3, written by Akemi Don Bowman.
Saddle up and join us as we head into the multiverse.
Okay, so last episode was a really exciting one. For those who want a quick recap, last episode, our character Annie Flash took the job that Oko had offered at the very beginning of this season, and she rode into town, into this abandoned town, to meet up with Oko's crew. And Oko's crew turns out to be this very eclectic group of the following individuals. And, I mean, we have Rakdos, like as in the demon god from Ravnica. We also have this new character named Tiny Bones, who is this kind of skeleton creature that can, you know, disassemble and reassemble himself on a whim. We have Breaches and Malcolm from Lost Caverns of Ixalan here. We have Ariette from Wilds of Eldraine alongside Ashiok, the planeswalker. We have Vraska. Yes, as in the Vraska, the Gorgon planeswalker who was Phyrexianized, and now she is here not Phyrexianized on Thunder Junction for some reason. We don't really know. Who else do we have? We got the Necromancer twins, Gisa and Gerolf. Who am I missing? There's Kerevec? So many in Elko's crew. We have Kerevec and Umezawa, who were broken out of jail last episode as well. I mean, we have this very eclectic group of individuals, and under no circumstance would any of these individuals be working together, except they are united under a common goal to break into the vault. And what is the vault? We don't really know. All we know is that there's something otherworldly powerful inside. And at the very end of last episode, Kellen had been on security detail for Ral Zarek, and Oko's crew had kind of gone in to steal the last key to the vault at Prosperity, the giant city in Thunder Junction. And at the very end of last episode, Kellen and Oko had finally met. They had run across each other in the street, and Kellen, last minute, kind of turned on Ral and the Sterling Company and saved his father and kind of joined Oko's crew at the very end. And I mean, this has been a moment culminating for three magic sets. So for the past like half a year, we have been waiting for this moment of when Kellen and Oko met, and I was not disappointed last episode.
We begin today's episode with this season's big bad, Akul. Akul is not happy because the last sixth key is evading him. He interrogates an overseer from the Sterling Company, and he gets an answer. I did hear a rumor about someone stealing something from Greywater, something important enough that Sterling Company headquarters sent out over 24 guards to retrieve it. Akul leaned back, mildly appeased, and clicked a nail against the rocky floor beneath him. Give me a name. The man shook his head, fearful. It was some shape-shifting fae from another plane. He had blue face paint and had help escaping, but that's all I know.
Fae with blue face paint. Yep, we know him. That's Oko. And he did steal the key from Greywater, as we'd seen last episode. Unfortunately, this information isn't enough for Akul's merciful side to come out, and he stabs the man in the gut with his scorpion-like tail after ordering his Hellspurs to find Oko and his crew.
So we transition to the man of the hour, Oko, at the mezzanine where he and his crew have gathered after stealing the key and successfully escaping the attack from the Sterling Company, thanks to Kellen. And Kellen approaches Oko on the upper balcony, and this is their first true conversation, and I just can't shake the feeling that Oko is faking his genuineness, or at least skewing it in his favor when he says he's happy to meet Kellen.
Oko says that Kellen will make a wonderful addition to the team, and that Kellen came to his rescue when he needed it most, where he vows to return the favor. But Kellan replies here, "I don't need favors. I just want to get to know you." And this is from the story. "You will," Oko promised. He knew how to sound genuine. And besides, he almost meant this one.
Okay, almost meant it? Like, seriously, Oko? Come on.
Yeah, I'll admit it, even I'm starting to become really doubtful Kellan is going to be happy by the end of all of this. I mean, poor kid. Seriously, poor Kellan. Well, as heartfelt as this father-son reunion is, it's interrupted when Kellan spots Ashiok prowling up the steps and approaching them in their floating stride.
Kellan is clearly upset and incredibly distrustful of Ashiok. And I mean, after everything Kellan had seen them do in Eldraine, we don't blame Kellan. But Oko warns him that their past history has no business in the here and now. But Kellan cannot seem to let it go. It's pretty obvious that the fact that his father and his crew allying with Ashiok and Ariette, well, that can't be good from Kellan's perspective. I mean, remember everything Kellan has been through with Ariette and Ashiok in Wilds of Eldraine.
Anyway, Kellan does his best to look past it for the time being and cooperate, but it's clear his guard is up. The crew gathers around and turns to Kervek, who places the key artifact they obtained from Greywater's vault. He says, "I believe the artifact is more than a key, and perhaps even more dangerous than we can understand. Whoever made it, and wherever it comes from, you could be unleashing another Phyrexia on the multiverse."
Vraska remarks here that he sounds afraid, but Kervek merely says he's rightfully cautious of such power, which, smart man, you should be. And Ashiok concludes that they need to unlock the vault before Akul or Bertram Greywater do, who's no doubt after them now that Oko's crew has stolen his key. And Malcolm points out here that they still don't even know where Tarnation is. Remember that Tarnation is the fortress built around the vault, home of the Hellspurs, and they keep its location in Thunder Junction very secret. And just a side note here, I am obsessed with the fact that this is named Tarnation. Like,
right?
It's just,
I
like,
love the name.
Tarnation is always like this ephemeral thing, right? What in Tarnation? Like, Tarnation isn't a place, right? It's like a state, kind of a state of being. And now, like, here in Magic, we've created it as an actual place. Anyway, I love it.
It's such good flavor. Yeah. So Annie just so happens to know of a person in Thunder Junction who studies ancient artifacts and probably knows more about the key and possibly the vault. This person's name is Nolan, and he's currently headed to Prosperity on a train guarded by the Sterling Company because he's a wanted outlaw. And this is from the story. Oko nodded. "We need to get to the outcaster before he reaches Prosperity." "Breaches," threw his arms in the air. "Capture and interrogate!" Gisa looks giddy. Geralf rolled his eyes. Oko turned to Kellan. "You're a former Sterling man. How familiar are you with the guard rotations on the train?" Kellan froze, uncertain. I don't want to do anything illegal."
"Aw, Kellan, baby. You're with a crew of outlaws now." This is sad to me because Kellan is clearly in over his head, isn't he?
Yeah, Kellan just has this heart of gold, and that will never change, not even on Thunder Junction. I can't help but admire how true to himself he is, even when he's so clearly different from his own father and wants his approval. Staying true to yourself like that, like standing by your beliefs, what you know to be right when everyone else around you doesn't agree, is so hard, y'all. And let's not forget, Kellan is still really young. Everyone else in this crew, many, many, many years his senior.
Yeah, this is some serious bravery. Just like, I mean, right? Like, it's always so brave to be who you truly are when you're around people who are nothing like you. That is a true bravery. Like, so many of us will just, like, conform and be a chameleon and just kind of, like, oh, yeah, that's all right. It's fine. These guys think it's fine. It's fine. But, like, that's not Kellan. And I respect that so much.
Me too.
But ultimately, and this is understandable, Kellan wants his father's approval. So he agrees to help. But he's really nervous to do it. And it's clear it goes against his code. And, Kellan is just struggling so much here between, I want to know my dad. That's all I'm asking. It shouldn't be this hard.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Whoa, what have I gotten myself into? But he can't just walk away because then he's walking away from the possibility of knowing his father. So he's really in a pickle. So we're going to fast forward in time a little bit. And this is from the story. The train sped across the golden desert, sun blazing through the elongated glass windows. Kellen tapped his boot nervously, counting the passengers around him with dread. There had to be at least 100 people in all the traveling cars combined. Maybe more. And this train is so, it's very magic, it's very fantasy, but so cool. It's like these tones of copper and gold and turquoise, but like the turquoise is like a light, like it's lit up, like it seems magical because it's kind of imbuing this light from it. And it's really cool. And my favorite part of this train, like the design is stunning. It's very cool. It's very based. It's clearly,
it's like
to me, based
ornate almost.
It's very like, ornate. And it's clearly based on like old school, like weaponry from like, if you look, if you think about old, like traditional Westerns, like they have like these really ornate patterns on their weaponry a lot of the time, on their belts, on, you know, different various like costuming pieces. And that's really mirrored here. But it's also like very modern and it's very fantasy because it's just this like, it's very ornate in the back, but then the front is like this super modern slope to a point instead of like being like that rounded train front. This one looks much more sleek and modern. But the coolest part is that it moves on, instead of having like multiple wheels on the train, there's one big wheel on each train car or on
it's
the front
so
train
cool.
car. No, it is on each train car. Let me say that
again. Yeah, it's on each train car. Yeah, like this giant wheel in the center that you can tell like powers the train forward. It's like if it imagine like a buzzsaw, right? Like a giant buzzsaw in the center of each train car, and that's what propels it forward. It's such a cool concept. Like I absolutely love this art piece by Leon Tucker. Like it's just, it's so good and it showcases this train. It's like, I had to take a moment just to describe this train because it's so cool looking.
Well, the art piece that it's in too, I don't want to stop at the train because the tracks are actually elevated off the ground. So they're not interrupting the landscape. And I just love that detail because underneath the train, you can see all these cactus, like the little round puffy cactus, not like the saguaro cactuses. And aloe vera is popping up everywhere. It is, but it's got this like plume of smoke following the train in the sky and on the horizon. And it's just, it's absolutely stunning. Leon Tucker, great job. Great work. This is an amazing piece.
Yeah, for sure. So Oko's crew, all here on this train, prepares to hijack this train and kidnap Nolan. We're on a heist now.
Which is amazing. My Agatha Christie dreams are coming true.
I know, right? So they use magical telepathy from Ashiok to be able to communicate to each other like through their minds. So they all have like this mind link. And I just have to say, it's kind of hilarious hearing all of these different personalities think to each other. I can't imagine how loud that is. We have Breeches, Oko, Kellen, Annie, Gisa, Geralf, Malcolm, Kervek, Umezawa, Vraska. What a group. And okay. So
just like if it was only Gisa and Breeches, it would be too much for me, right? Because
same.
Breeches
yeah.
is like
yeah.
Breeches is like big boom. And like, you know, he's like, he speaks in his like screamy voice. And then Gisa, like Gisa's just like so excited about everything.
She's
all the
like
time.
The mad scientist.
Yeah. I can't imagine having both. Like Oko must be going nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and Kellen right. too. This has to be like, so anyway, this is so hilarious. We're just going to read to you their banter because it is so entertaining.
So this part is from the story and we're going to go back and forth so you can kind of understand it a little bit better. Breeches is ready to blow up the bridge on your signal, Malcolm says.
Boom! Breeches shrieked excitedly.
Is that the signal? Gisa cut in. Her giggling was bordering on euphoric. I can hardly stand the weight.
Of course that's not the signal, Geralf tutted, exasperated. You're to raise the corpses after Breeches blows up the bridge and forces the train to stop. We've gone over this 100 times. Why is it so difficult for you to pay even half a mind to what anyone else says?
Corpses? Kellen tried to ask, but no one seemed to hear him over the necromancer's bickering.
Stop telling me what to do, Gisa snarled back. You're not in charge. The only reason you were even invited on this job was because I allowed you to be.
Having a stitcher is far more useful than a ghoul caller. Besides, I'm here for the secrets this thunder can offer my craft, Geralf countered. Though at this stage, I'm not entirely sure it's worth having to endure the sound of your voice.
Ashiok didn't create a telepathic link for the two of you to argue like children, Vraska scolded. Save it for after the mission. Right now, we need to stick to the plan.
So while all this is going on, Kellen, Oko, and Umizawa, disguised, sneak into the adjacent train car, which is the luggage carriage. And while Umizawa gets to work on picking the lock to the next car where Nolan is, which, by the way, he uses this really cool origami tech. Like, Umizawa has this little doodad. I don't know what else to call it. A device, I guess I could say, but I'm me, so I'm going to call it a doodad. And it's like, it basically is origami, and it like can turn itself into all these different things. And so he uses it to fit perfectly into the slot. And while this is happening, the internal banter continues.
Our window for blowing up this bridge and stopping the train is getting smaller, Malcolm noted through the mental link. How are we doing in there?
Give me a minute, Umezawa replied coolly.
Ready and waiting, Breeches squawked.
Wait, was that the signal? Geesa asked.
He said give him a minute, Geralt barked.
How dare you raise your voice to me? Geesa spat back. Don't think our temporary truce will keep me from taking your tongue.
Threaten me all you like, but I can just as easily stitch your mouth shut.
You ruin everything. I'm so tired of your constant nagging. If I could—
The most unreliable, self-serving—
Irritating, obnoxious.
Would the two of you be quiet? Malcolm roared. How is Breeches supposed to hear the signal over all this noise? Signal! Breeches' voice boomed.
No, Geesa, what are you doing? Stop! Geralt yelled.
But it's too late. Geesa has already raised her zombies, so I guess the hijack is on? Sterling guards, roused by the zombie chaos, burst into the luggage carriage from the opposite door Umizawa is still trying to unlock, and all weapons are drawn. Kellen and Oko fend off the attackers, and Kellen is clearly all about disarming them, but Oko hardly bats an eye about full-on knifing a guard through the ribs.
One of the Sterling guards throws a metal star before Kellen can disarm him, and this hits Umezawa. Kellen rushes to his side, exclaiming he needs a medic, Geralt, who can heal, but Oko says there's no time for that. And I mean, really, like, Oko is coming across as extremely heartless in this moment.
Yeah, you can see Kellen, you can see Kellen and Oko butting heads, like, just more and more. Kellen is about, like, being there for people and helping people when they need it. Oko clearly is one-track mind. He has, it's all about the mission and kind of,
and
like, self-serving. Yeah.
But Umezawa is still conscious for now. So Kellen shouts through the telepathy link to the crew for help. And though Oko is clearly unhappy about it, Annie responds that she's on her way.
This is also when Kellen remarks the train isn't slowing down as it's supposed to. Oko insists they need to focus on the mission. Kellen and Oko bash out of the train car to get to the roof of the train, where Kellen identifies the car where Nolan is being kept. And up here, a firefight erupts as the Sterling guards chase them onto the roofs and open fire with their magical thunder weapons.
And if you've seen the marketing for this set, if you've seen the video that was created,
yeah,
this is
the debut
that
video.
Moment.
Yeah.
Like, this is, it's a representation of this moment. It's not beat for beat, but I love this marketing moment. It's so good. So if you want to, like, get an idea of these characters and how they are kind of on this train in this moment. And really, like, it does a good job of spotlighting each of their personalities really well. I highly recommend checking that out. It's so good.
Oh, it's great. It's so good.
So Kellen and Oko are still mostly on the defense. They're dodging out of the way. And all Kellen can do is worry. He worries for the people on the train. And he worries for his father. What would happen if he couldn't save his dad? Kellen's shoulders shook. And he redirected his magic to protect Oko. If only one of them can make it out alive.
Luckily, Geese's zombies finally intervene in the way they're supposed to now, ambushing the Sterling guards. Oko manages to sneak into Nolan's train car while the Sterling guards are caught up against fighting a wall of zombies. And with Kellen's help, dispatches the remaining individuals guarding Nolan himself.
Oko grips onto Nolan's arm and asks the crew why the train isn't slowing down. Annie confirms that the zombies had reached the conductor, so no one is driving the train. And this is from the story. I'll fly to the front and take care of it, Kellen said, moving for the window. No, Oko ordered, forcing an arm in front of him. We need to get the outcaster and Umizawa to safety. Yes, but the people, Kellen started, will be dealt with later, Oko finished. Kellen clenched his teeth, flustered. We don't have time to argue about this. Exactly, Oko said, and tilted his head toward the expanse of desert. Get ready. Our extraction team is here.
Annie appears with Fortune, galloping alongside the train, and successfully extracts Umezawa and Nolan from the train. As Oko prepares to jump, Kellen realizes the bridge over the canyon up ahead has been completely destroyed, and the train is hurtling towards it without a way to stop it. Oko may not care, but Kellen definitely does.
And the reason that that's destroyed, right, is because that's what Breach's part of the plan was yep, to blow up boom. That bridge. Yeah, exactly. But because the zombies got to the conductor, there's no one, like, the plan wasn't to just, like, have the train careen off of this cliff, but that's what's about to happen now. So Kellen has no choice but to hop off the train after Oko. But as soon as he's on his feet, he watches the train careen toward its doom, and he doesn't think, he just acts. He ran on instinct, throwing his hands up in the air as giant gold bursts of energy erupted from his palms. The vines whipped forward, snatching the train by the last carriage, but it wasn't enough to stop it. The momentum of the train fought back, and Kellen felt the tug on his magic burn through him, making his veins scorch. He strained against the weight, digging his heels into the sand as he hung on, desperate. All those people, he couldn't let them die. He wouldn't.
Kellen threw his head back and every vein in his body pulsed. His knuckles blazed and he held the vines like they were rooted inside of him, refusing to let them break. The train screeched, slowing, but the first car was already hanging over the edge. Kellen's boots dragged across the sand, inch by inch.
Oh, come on, Kellen, you can do this. Oko approaches Kellen, but not to help. To insist that Kellen can't save anyone on the train and that they need to go. You see, the Sterling Company is about to ambush them in a full-scale attack that the crew just cannot hold their own against. But Kellen literally digs in his heels, determined to save the people on the train. And Oko? Oko turns and leaves him to deal with it on his own.
Out of sheer will, Kellen manages to slow down the train enough to let the passengers escape safely. Annie rushes in with Fortune to hold off the Sterling Company and protect Kellen's vulnerable back. And this is from the story. When the final civilian hit the sand, Annie turned to Kellen and thrust out an arm. Come on, kid. Kellen released his vines with a gasp, and the train shot over the edge of the cliff, exploding in the distance the moment it hit the ground. The booms sounded one after the other as each rail car landed in quick succession, followed by a barrage of rock and debris ricocheting off the canyon walls. Kellen grabbed Annie's hand and heaved himself onto Fortune's back. And they bolted for the ridge, leaving the wreckage and the Sterling Company behind. And that's how we end. I mean, go, Kellen.
Yeah, that's crazy. So a lot of stuff happened today. And like, first of all, I just want to say, I said it earlier, my Agatha Christie dreams come true. This is a heist. This is a total heist story.
It was a total train heist. It was amazing.
And that's what you
want to
see in a Western set. Like that, yes, 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 yes. Obsessed. So good. Golden. 10 out of 10. No notes. But like, Oko, my man.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
I have so many feelings about this because I just, it's got to be so hard. It's so hard already when you like grow up with a parent who is nothing like you and you have to like, but you have your whole adolescence to like figure out how to talk to that person, how to interface with that person, how to get along, how to live and let live with that person. These two are two fully formed adult humans. Kellen is like, you know, what we said, like 16 to 19
probably
here.
Somewhere like 17-ish. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like that's pretty close to being an adult, right? That is like, you know, in real world time, that's like you're about to like go off to, you're about to graduate high school and go do whatever it is you're going to do next. And that means you're out in the world and you're by yourself and you're on your own. So Kellen, who has been through all these adventures already, has matured a lot. So like Kellen, you know, you could say that Kellen is mature for his age at this point. He's a fully fledged person, right? He knows who he is. His mama made him into a very good man. But Oko is who he is too. Mm-hmm. And neither one of them can change that about the other. And yep. The fact that Oko just abandoned him though,
I
that
know.
Broke my heart.
Yeah, like And Oko saw all of this happen. You know, he saw Kellen trying his hardest. I mean, Kellen didn't know that he was going to be able to save anybody on that train. I mean, he's trying to stop a magical train from careening off of a canyon ledge. Like, Kellen demonstrated not just bravery, but also power here. On, like, there's clearly something more to Kellen's power that he hasn't tapped into, and we're starting to see it, I think. Oko saw all of this and decided, nah, I'm not going to help. He could have. Oko is just as powerful, if not more powerful, than Kellen. He could have thrown his vines and helped to stop the train. He didn't. He chose not to. And he could have abandoned his son.
Yeah, he could have done anything. Anything at all to help him. He could have stayed there and been like, stop, come on, we got to go, we got to go, we got to go, until the last possible second. He didn't do that either.
Yep.
And I don't know, like, was it because he knew Annie was there and Annie would help? Is it because he's really, truly that heartless and callous?
I'm starting to think it's the latter.
I am, unfortunately. Yeah. I know. Unfortunately for Kellen, I think it's the latter. And, like, you know, it's so funny because I've loved Oko for a long time because I love Eldraine. I love the Fae. I love that Fae are tricksters. I love that Fae are not always what they seem. But Oko is coming across as very one-dimensional here because he's so focused on that mission. But that's Oko, right? Like, that's always
it
been
is
Oko. And I never
it is
cared.
Absolutely Oko.
I never cared until it was put in the context of him having to take care of another person.
Yep. Same.
And then it all falls apart.
The complexities of Oko as a villain character is kind of starting to become a little bit more dynamic and less one-dimensional, and I really like it. Like, as frustrating as it is, and as mad as I am at Oko, that just goes to show that the layers are getting more complex in Oko's character, too. We're starting to see, because of this situation with Kellen, we're starting to see Oko kind of unfold as this villainous character. Yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
It's not just fun and games with Oko anymore. Like, there's stuff on the line here.
Yeah.
There's Kellen's entire emotional, like, well-being on the line here. And Oko still can't manage to turn himself away from the win, from the score, from the mission.
Yep.
And just say, like, maybe this is not the right thing to do. I don't think it occurred to Oko. I don't think it occurred to him. I think Oko is so used to being Oko and to winning and to being this trickster that he's just like, meh, it'll work out. It'll be fine.
It's so clear that Oko has never had to care about anybody other than Oko ever before, you know, in his entire existence as a Fae, you know, and I think that is becoming painfully obvious as Kellen is trying to get his father to care about him, or just wants desperately for his father's approval, for Oko to stop thinking beyond Oko and start seeing him as a son. It's just not happening because Oko doesn't know how to do that.
I had hope initially because there is a line in the story that takes place when Kellen is telling Oko, like, hey, this was my mom and I'm your son, right? And Oko is like, he remembers Kellen's mother fondly. He remembers her very well. And I really thought, like, that love that he had for Kellen's mother would extend to Kellen, but it didn't. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating because I'm like, you're capable of love, my man's. Like, you loved Kellen's mother.
Yeah.
In a way, but it was to an extent.
It was
eventually
in a way.
He left.
Yes. Because eventually. Eventually he did leave. He didn't stay in Eldraine. He's a planeswalker. He's a trickster. He's going to go do his Oko thing in the multiverse. He didn't stay with Kellen's mother, and Kellen's mother eventually had to move on. Right. Yeah. And that was the whole story we saw in Wilds of Eldraine at the very end of that story. It's just, I had hope too, and that hope is quickly dwindling to, like, non-existent. I don't think that this is going to end well. This can't end well.
At this point, I don't either, because, like, you don't abandon someone you care about, no matter the circumstance.
Yeah.
Right? Like, look at Annie and her nephew. What I love so much is the juxtaposition of Annie's love for her nephew. She literally buried her weapon. She stopped being an outlaw when her nephew was injured. She took up the, and then she dug that thing back up And she hit the road again when she could finally take down the person who had hurt her nephew. Look at that love. Look at that care. And then you juxtapose that with Oko.
Yeah. And look who came back for Kellen. You know, in this episode, it was Annie who came back for Kellen, you know, and so it just,
I love Annie.
Yeah. Annie is also, as Oko kind of goes more into villain, you know, and like, I'm liking him less and less. My love for Annie is like in tandem getting higher. And I'm like, okay, I like this Annie character. She's brand new, you know, to this set. We had never been introduced to her before. And she has such good qualities that are in line with Kellen's. You know, you see a lot of the equal, I'm going to do what's right sort of mentality, and I care about other people sort of mentality.
I'm going to help you because you're a person and you deserve to be helped. You don't have to qualify that like with Annie or with Kellen, but with Oko, he only cares if it benefits Oko.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, go. All right.
All these characters.
Well, y'all. Oh, my God. Well, the characters. I was going to wrap this up, but I have to say the characters in this episode are so good.
They're so good.
Gisa and Geralf make me laugh so much.
The banter in this episode was just good, hysterical. I was laughing out loud reading this. And I actually had to stop a couple of times reading that aloud because like I was so excited and laughing like alongside. I just like we had to take multiple times to read that banter in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
It was just so hilarious. And it just, the personalities shine in this whole set, but in this episode in particular, just those personalities like Gisa, Geralf, Malcolm and Breeches, part of all of this, and then Vraska is in the background trying to keep them all like from bickering like children. It's so funny.
It's wild. I mean, I just feel like throwing like an Annie flash with an Ashiok is just wild. It's just wild. It's just madness. And I love it. And Kimmy has done such a good job bringing all these characters to the forefront.
Yes.
One of the things I love so much about this particular set is that there are it feels like there's a gazillion characters in the set and none of them get lost.
Mm-hmm.
None of them get lost in the story. If you read the stories, you're gonna like, it's not like sometimes you read a story, right? And you're like, wait, let me flip back 20 pages. Who was this?
Right.
What did they do?
Yeah.
But Akemi writes the characters so particularly. And so like each one is so intensely themselves that every time I see their name, I go, yep, that's who that is. And they'll do like an action or they'll say a thing and I'll be like, oh, right. That's who that is. Like Akemi did a great job with that. So major shout out to Akemi for that right there. But we have reached our stop for today's episode. But hey, if you like today's episode, please tell us. Your reviews mean so much to us. We read every single one and we appreciate all of your feedback.
As always, you can read this story for yourself at mtgstory.com. And if you want the audiobook of the full story, you can find it in this same playlist you're listening to now, or there's a YouTube version as well.
Thanks so much for listening, and I'm excited to see you tune in to our next episode coming to you right around the corner. But until then, have a magical day.